This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to this. It is the Rugby Dungeon. Thank you for listening, thank you for subscribing, and all those sort of things. Anyway, enough of that, because I am joined by a member of a Gloucester dynasty and a future Ulster great, Billy Burns. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
It's okay. How are things over in Belfast?
Yeah, really good. Yeah, it's been enjoyable. Obviously, it's a bit of a change of environment for me from what I was used to at Gloucester, but I've enjoyed my time over here so far, and we started off the season pretty well, which is positive. And it's all looking good at the moment.
Now, how are you finding the town of Belfast? I went over there last year to watch the Harlequins game, and I absolutely loved it there.
Yeah, it seems to have quite a bad rap from people back in England. But since coming over here, me and my girlfriend live here, and we've absolutely loved it. It's a cool little city. There's some cool stuff to do in town, and then it's great because you're a 10-minute drive away from the seaside, and you're also a 10-minute drive from the countryside. So you've got a bit of everything, which is nice.
Yeah, the only downside to it are those damn taxis. I can't get over how bad the taxis are.
Yeah, they're brutal. They are brutal, and they chew your ear off as well when you get in there. So it's a bit of a nightmare. But it's a cool city. There's loads to do. So and we've probably only just scratched the surface. So we're hoping for many more good days out. That's for sure.
Now, anyone who's seen you play, knows anything about you, listens to how you speak, would say that accent is strictly West Country. However, you've ended up in Ulster, and you're there as a Irish qualified individual. What's the Irish link?
So it's my grandfather. So it's my father's dad, who was Irish. So I've always known that link was there, and it's always been a possibility to come over here. And probably not many people knew it about me. And obviously, with Freddie playing for England, it was even more that probably people didn't know. But it was a great thing to have, and it was a great opportunity for me to come over here. I felt like I was at a stage in my career where I needed a bit of a change and a little bit of a freshen up. It's worked out well for me.
What's it like joining Ulster? Because obviously, you know, without going too much into the trials and tribulations that club had last year, you and Will Addison, you two have gone in there, turned the chapter.
I've had that question quite a lot, and what's gone in the past is nothing to do with me, really. I know that Ulster's a club with a great history, and I look back at when I was a kid and watched rugby, and I'd flick the telly on and watch Ulster in the European Cup games, and you'd see them getting to the finals and achieving big things, and that's probably been missing over the last few years. So I looked at the squad that they had here and the coaching staff that they were building, and it was an exciting one. It was just an opportunity for me to go out there and like you said, try something different and be in a different environment with a different group of people.
How are you finding the Pro 14 to play in?
Yeah, it's good. It's a really strange league compared to the Premiership. It's obviously just having teams from different countries is probably one of the strangest things. It's a very fast game. It's probably not quite as physical as the Premiership, I'd say, but it's up there definitely in skill wise, and I'd say the speed of the games are definitely quicker. Teams are probably more willing to chuck the ball about, whereas in the Premiership it can be quite a nutritional game sometimes, where teams just kick the ball back and forth and focus on their set piece. Now, don't get me wrong, that's a massive part of our game, but also we want to be able to run the ball and take teams through phases. So it suits my game quite nicely. So yeah, I'm enjoying it.
Do you think it's opened up the way you play a bit more?
Yeah, I think so. I think that sort of comes in with the reason I came over here was obviously they didn't have Dan McFarland in at that at that stage, but from talking to Dwayne Peel, the backs coach, and Jared Payne, the defence coach, it was the style of rugby that they wanted Ulster to play, which excited me. And like I said, that's an expansive one where we keep the ball in hand and we take teams through phases and we really stress them with good attacking rugby. So obviously there's going to be times where the weather doesn't allow or certain situations in games where we are going to have to be a bit more pragmatic. But I just enjoyed the fact that I was in a team that were willing to take a few risks and to play some good rugby.
It's quite interesting at Ulster now because it seems to be they have gone down a road not only bringing in new lads, yourself and Will, as I mentioned before, but also giving youngsters a shot. Now,
yeah, Mikey Lowry.
Brilliant player. And also, I love the fact that he's named after the Bad Boys character too.
Yeah, I didn't remember that actually, but yeah, fair play. It's a good one. We haven't brought that up in front of him yet.
Just tell me a little bit about yourself growing up then, because, now, hang on, have I got this right? Are there three brothers or are there two?
Yeah, no, three older brothers I got, yeah.
Oh, you got three older brothers, so there's four of you?
Four of us in total, yeah, four of us.
Right, so obviously I know what Freddie does. What do the other two do?
So my old man and my mum, they've run a family business back in Bath, a plumbing company.
Okay.
And so the oldest brother, Jack, he works for them and pretty much runs the show there now. My dad's a little bit older, so he's sort of taking a backseat role and Jack, my oldest brother's taken that on board. And then the one behind him, Sam, he was in the Royal Air Force.
The awesome.
For about, I think, probably 10 years or so. He came out a few years ago and he's come back and he's also now working for the company. So he's helping out at home. So he lives in Bath as well. And he actually, he got citizenship when he was based in Cyprus for 5 or 6 years. So he actually plays for the Cyprus national team as well.
Does
so,
he?
Yeah, he does. Yeah. They played Israel on the weekend, which I watched, which they narrowly lost, but he scored a lovely little chip and chase try, which was good. So that was good to see.
Not so long ago, I'm pretty sure that Cyprus had the longest undefeated record of any international team. Is that right, yeah?
Yeah, that's right, yeah, yeah. He told me on numerous occasions.
Have you been out there to watch him play?
I haven't, actually, no. I went out there a long time ago now to watch him play in like a sevens tournament, which was just for like a Cyprus invitational team. But I've not seen him play for the Cyprus national team. I've watched him, they send across like Facebook links and stuff, and I've watched him on the laptop or whatever, and my parents have been out to watch him.
Yeah.
But no, I haven't actually watched him, but if I get the chance to, I'd love to. I used to go out to Cyprus when he was based out there for holidays and stuff, and it was always good because I and Apple was only two minutes down the road, which was a good night out, but he had plenty of cool things to do around his little city, so it's a cool little story, to be fair.
Well, the only time I've ever really felt like I could easily move away from the UK, because I'm pretty homeward bound, I do like it in the UK, is when I went out to Cyprus. And I've got this thing, wherever I am, this is so sad, isn't it? Wherever I am, I will try and train with the local club because I just think it's a cool thing to do.
Yeah, nice.
I found Limassol Crusaders and they train on the beach. They're basically a bunch of exiles, but not just British exiles. You've got like, and there's an Argentine guy there. There was a couple of Italian and French guys there. There was one guy who's actually from Cyprus who was 16 off to Claremont, but they train on the beach instead of going, you know, showers afterwards, straight into the sea. Yeah. I thought, I could do this.
Mate, it's an awesome lifestyle, isn't it? It is an awesome lifestyle they have out there.
Oh, it's absolutely class.
So yeah, I used to always enjoy going out there and having a holiday there. I watched, like I said, when I watched him play in that Sevens tournament, that was pretty cool. I think it was, what was it called? It was the, it was Akrotiri 10, sorry. It was a tennis tournament, which is quite big out there where all the teams around the sort of place come. So yeah, it was cool.
I assume rugby's in the family then?
No, it's funny you say that. My old man, he didn't start playing rugby till he was late 30s. He used to motocross. And he was very good at it, to be fair. I think one of his mates asked him to go up and play. I might be wrong on this story slightly, but asked him to go up and play, and he went up and played and had a good few drinks afterwards, and the rest is history. So we obviously grew up going and watching him play up at the club he was at, and then we'd always be having a ball in our hands whenever we had the chance, two on twos, just playing little rugby matches, which would normally end in me in tears. But it was all good fun. So we were always raised with a rugby ball, and we just love sport in general. We're massive football fans. We used to love going go-karting and all that sort of stuff, and it would always be pretty competitive. So I think that's where the streak comes from.
And are you all fly halves?
No. So obviously me and Fred are both fly halves, and then Sam can play fly half, but he's played a bit more fullback and in the centre. And then Jack, when he used to play, doesn't play anymore, but when he used to play, he was a bit of a jack of all trades, to be fair, and pardon the pun. He was he could play fly half, he could play on the wing, he could play in the second row, which is a pretty select group of positions. But very talented rugby player. He was very good at football, my brother Jack. He's good on both feet, which he was naturally gifted with. But there's a few of us in a few different positions.
Hang on. Have I made this up? Have you sponsored a football team?
No, I the only thing I did was I coached at Cheltenham Saracens Rugby Club. And they had a football club running alongside, it wasn't alongside it anymore, but next to that, and I did a bit of stuff with them before, but no, I've never sponsored. I'd love to get involved and do it at some stage there.
I
love watching footy.
I'm going to be having very, very strong words with Mark Atkinson, because he teed me up for that question, and he'll be paying the price.
It's not like I can just spin a few words that aren't true though. So
what?
He's probably got it mixed up with a rugby club that I was at, because I was coaching at Cheltenham Saracens, like I said, and I did loads of work with them up there. So he might have got that one slightly wrong. Yeah.
So,
but if there are any football clubs out there that want sponsorship, hit me up, because I'd be keen to get involved.
Be very, very careful, mate.
Yeah.
I think sponsoring a sports club, a rugby club, in fact, pretty much anything, is just a guaranteed way to throw money down the drain.
I know, I do. I'm that sort of bloke, though. I like taking a few risks. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, why don't you go and just buy yourself a racehorse?
I almost did not long ago with a couple of the boys at Gloucester, but I bottled it last minute. In fairness, with James Hansen, he's got a racehorse now. There's a few of them, I think. I'm not sure who the rest of them were in the syndicate, but I bottled it, so I couldn't put my money where my mouth was.
Well, someone approached me through work to put into a syndicate. Initially, I quite liked the idea. It's just too much effort, and it's not the upfront cost. It's all the ongoing stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I wouldn't be able to watch it. I'd be too nervous if it got hurt.
Yeah,
I'd be pulling myself. So,
and then you got to shoot the thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know. It's savage, isn't it? Yeah. I do like going to the races. I used to always go to Cheltenham races and watch the horses and stuff. So I'll never say never, but not right now anyway.
Now, leaving Gloucester, it all seemed a bit sudden. Was that basically how it was?
No, listen, it was. I can see it how it's got sore like that, and I can understand people's... people's opinions and stuff like that, but for me it was obviously, listen, Gloucester signed Danny Cipriani at the end of that year, and I'm one of those players that for me I don't like not being involved, and I like playing week in, week out, and I struggled to see where I'd get that at Gloucester. Not that I'm not competitive, and I wouldn't back myself, but I just felt like I was going to struggle, and I was also just at a stage where I was just so comfortable at Gloucester. And I know a lot of people will go, well, that's brilliant, but also you can get a little bit too comfortable. And I just felt like it was the right time. And obviously, also, we're in need of a fly half, and I sort of fitted that bill. And like I said, I wanted to have a look. And as soon as I came over and had a little look around and got to know a bit more about the place, it just seemed like the right thing for me to do. And like I said, at the moment, I know it's very early days. I've only been here for 3 or 4 months, but... I'm enjoying myself over here. I'm enjoying the rugby. I'm enjoying the boys at the club. I feel like I'm improving as a player, which is obviously a main thing. It was a sudden change, but there was a lot of thought behind it. And like I said, at the moment, it feels like it was the right decision for me to make.
How many years were you at Gloucester for?
Oh gosh, I don't even know.
Like since age 15 or something ridiculous.
Yeah, I would have been there. Yeah, long time. Probably eight or 9 years, not all of them senior years. I think probably senior for five years or so.
I guess when you think about professional sportsmen, a lot of them move around quite a lot. But actually, that must have been quite a big deal, the first day that you arrive at training.
Yeah. It was huge, because I've got a lot of really good friends at Gloucester as well, and I've got a lot of good memories there, and I still watch the Premiership, and I support Gloucester till the cows come home. I love the club, and I think it's a club going in a good direction. It was just, like I said, it just felt like the right thing for me to do at the time. And I spoke to my family and my friends and my girlfriend and my parents, and They all agreed, and it just so worked. So yeah, it was a massive, massive deal. But I still go. But I had a week off last week, and I went back to Cheltenham for a couple of days because I've still got a property there and caught up with the boys. And that never leaves you. Once you've got those friends, they stay forever. So as much as it was a big decision, it was also the right decision for me.
Why do people call you Steve?
You have to get Mark Atkinson back on the phone. There's absolutely no reason for it at all. There's honestly not. It was a toss up between him and Billy Meeks. I got called it. I think the reason they called me Steve was because they like to think that Steve was the sort of name where you do something stupid if you're called Steve. Does that make sense? Which, don't get me wrong, to anybody called Steve, listen to it, I think Steve's a lovely name, but it just stuck with me. And it's just stuck for years. I was actually talking to a couple of boys about it when I went back, and we were saying how it's got absolutely no rhyme or reason for being my nickname, but it's just stuck. So
no grounding whatsoever.
Yeah. Nothing whatsoever. Not that I know of, anyway. There might be something that everyone's laughing about behind my back, but not that I know of.
During your Gloucester days, people are calling out Steve rather than
Bill. Steve. Mark was the one who probably drove it home most, and then everybody just sort of caught onto it as well. And the worst thing was I was not really responding to Billy. I was only really responding to Steve. So it was an interesting one. But like you said, I had a couple of referees look at me funny on the pitch because I'd be going to kick for the corner or whatever, and boys would be going like shouting Steve for like a little quick tap or something like that. They sort of be looking at me going, they got something wrong here. Who's this Steve geezer? But it's a funny one. It is. I think it will stick forever as long as I know those boys anyway.
You, Mark, are quite close because from what I remember interviewing him, did you guys not swap shirts, as in shirt numbers, just so Mark could have a 10 shirt?
Yeah, it was always a dream of Mark to wear the number 10. And he actually wore it on the weekend for Gloucester. He got his shout again. But yeah, he wore number 10 and I wore number 12. So that's how far our relationship goes. That's what I'm willing to do for Mark. But he's starting to tell stories about me to you guys. So I don't know if I can trust him anymore.
Exactly right. I actually remember that game because I remember Nick Mellins pointing out that Mark Atkinson's at 10 and Billy's at 12. And I thought, that's an interesting development. I wonder what the plan is here. There was no plan.
No, it was no plan. It was just simply Mark just wanting to tell people a few years down the line that he's played 10 for Gloucester. But I'm very close with Mark. He's one of my real good mates. We went back and had a good time with him on the weekend just gone and caught up with him. So he's one of my closer mates.
Just describe yourself as a player then and what you hope to achieve every time that you go on the field.
I think it's kind of what I touched on earlier when I said about the reasons I've come over here. I'm a player who I like to think I wear my heart on my sleeve and I try things on the pitch. And listen, I'm not going to be a player that doesn't make mistakes, but I'm a player that will hopefully try and spark things for a team. And I just enjoy going out there. I don't take myself too seriously. I just enjoy going out there with my mates and playing a good game of rugby, doing what I can for the team and hopefully getting good results because that's what makes it the sport that we all love, I guess, when we're playing is if you can come off the pitch with wins. So, like I said, I enjoy playing with the ball in hand and I just like going out there and having a good time, to be honest.
What weight are you, Bill?
What weight am I?
Yeah.
I am 84 kilos at the moment.
So, in the land of the giant, you're relatively small for rugby.
Yeah.
So, where I'm going with this is one of the things that everyone talks about in the pub is like, who are the hardest players, biggest hitters, so on and so forth. And when it comes down to, like, the bravest players, I always think it's the guys like yourself who are 84 kgs playing alongside, you know, the Ruinak, like the Mustangs.
Yeah,
the
big boys.
Do you consider yourself as fairly brave?
I think so. I think it's either brave or stupid. I'm not sure which one it is. I think so. I've probably, coming out of, like, schoolboy rugby and college, I didn't enjoy defending at all, and you could probably see that I missed a lot of tackles in games. But in fairness, since I was at Gloucester, I worked with Johnny Bell. He sort of, I remember the first thing he said to me is, "You're never going to be a player who smacks people backwards and makes big tackles, but what you can be is someone who gets people to the floor and chops them real low." And that's what I've enjoyed doing. And ever since then, I've sort of had a different outlook on defence, and I absolutely love it. I love both sides of the ball now. And don't get me wrong, sometimes I get my head in the wrong position and I come off second best. But I think as long as that intent's there and that enjoyment's there, then that's the main thing. And like you said, you've got to remember, I'm small, which means that I can get a lot lower than a lot of these guys. And I know it's always said at minis rugby and stuff like that, people can't run without their legs. So if I can get lower than them and take the legs out, then they've got nowhere to go. So
very true.
There's pluses and minuses. Of course, there's going to be times where, like you said, the Ruin Ackermans of this world and guys like that can run at you and they'll get some gains off you. But majority of the time, I back myself in defence. I like to think that it's not thought of as a weakness of mine. I guess bravery is probably the main ingredient.
You must be a supremely confident guy. That's what I think. Not only just because you're 84 kg, but also like the way that you play.
I am a confident guy. I think you've got to be nowadays. You've got, especially in the role that fly halves play, especially nowadays, you've got to be the leader of the team, and you've got to show that. I think a lot of the time, don't get me wrong, it's not all about fly halves. That's not what I'm trying to say. They're a small cog in a big wheel. But I think a lot of the time, especially when things are going wrong or not quite going to plan, I think players look to their fly halves to guide them. And you've got to be that calm figure who it sometimes comes across as arrogance, but it's not. It's just making it look like you, even when you're not in control, making it look like you're in control sometimes. So it feeds off on other guys around you. And I guess that, yeah, confidence is a massive part of that. So I think in any fly half nowadays, you look at the Johnny Sextons, the Owen Fowles of this world, they all carry that presence.
And, yeah.
Like I said, sometimes it can look as arrogance, but you can guarantee it's not. It's just them hungry to not lose and hungry to do the best for their team.
Tell me this then. Have you ever found yourself in a situation where, you know, you got to show, you know, this outward persona of confidence, but actually you're quite shaken? It's just a case of, okay, I can't let the other lads see that I've been shaken.
Yeah, definitely. I think there are times. There's not too many times, because as rugby players nowadays, you prepare for absolutely everything that gets thrown at you. So you pretty much know what you've got to do in all situations. But yeah, sometimes it is like that. I remember watching. Have you watched that documentary on Amazon Prime, the Man City one?
Not yet. No.
There's a good part in it that has always stuck with me, with Pep Guardiola, where he speaks about. They say, "Oh, how do you always get the best out of your players, like in halftime team talks?" And he was like, "Do you know what, sometimes I get asked questions and I don't know the answer, but I give them an answer with just supreme confidence and they believe in me, and sometimes I'm just blagging my way through it. But if I know that if my players respect me and believe in me and are willing to fight for me and do what I say, then that's half the battle." And I think that's quite a key thing in across all sorts of sports,
that's
to be honest.
Interesting.
It's always stuck with me.
So I actually think that is like a road to complete dead end. I'm amazed that that's actually the case, because I do a bit of coaching and I think I'm going to be found out at any time, because truth is, with rugby, it's such a complex game. It's impossible to know everything. And the more you know, the more you realise that you don't know. So if somebody asks me a question, if I blag it, I know I'll be found out immediately. So I always put 100%, I don't know that. I will find out for you by Thursday.
I get that. I think it's more. It's not blagging it. It's more. I'm not sure how to say it, but it's more like sometimes you're under such pressure in games, and there's things coming from you at all angles that it's hard to get that clarity and that clear sort of thought process, and you're on the spot sometimes, and that's just the way it works. So I think, like on a whole, like I said, you don't want to be doing that too often. You should know your process, whatever the situation is. But sometimes it does come down to just being strong, being confident, and getting that message across to the rest of your players so that they can believe in you and hopefully they can execute their roles.
Do you find as a fly half that it's the processing of information that you improve, bring in most as you get older?
Yeah, I think it's just like there's so many different situations you find yourself in games that the more experience you get, the more different situations you find yourself in, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I think it definitely, especially I've found that year on year, as a whole, my game's generally improved because I'm understanding the game more. And I've been in situations where things haven't been going our way, or things have been going really well, or we're winning by 3 points with 2 minutes to go, or we're losing by six with 5 minutes to go. Do you know what I mean? And then you sort of, it's all about then that muscle memory and remembering. And I think that's why analysis is such a big part of it, because if you play games and you don't analyse your performance, you're never going to know what to do when you get in that situation again, whether you do it right or whether you do it wrong. So I think it's just those mental sort of notes that you create when you play that make all the difference.
And how much analysis do you do? Because you know, I speak to a range of players and...
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The answer on that is always vastly different.
Yeah, I do loads. I do a lot. Partly just because I love watching rugby, to be honest with you. I know I sound like a right rugby pig, don't I? But
I think
it's especially for me in my position, it's key that I think for fly halves and line-out callers and stuff, you need to know the role of not just yourself, but pretty much everybody in the team.
Yeah.
So that you can guide them. So I wouldn't be confident on a Saturday or a Friday night going into a game if I haven't watched a load of footage before. And I'm one of those, if I feel more comfortable going into a game and more relaxed, I generally perform better. So I've sort of just got into a habit of, I'll look at footage pretty much every day, probably for a couple of hours a day, write my notes out and all that, and then I'll be prepared and ready to go in the game.
That's amazing. So what are you personally looking for from your position? Or are you not going to tell me that?
No. There's loads of different stuff. It's all pretty similar, but it's simple things from, have they got a left footer in their back line? Does their fly half pass well off his left hand? Or it's little things like that. What side does their winger normally step off? Just little things. So if you find yourself in that position, you can kind of preempt what they're going to do. And I think that's why rugby's sort of improving so much, is that players now have got such a wide... what's the word I'm looking for? They've got such a big span of different skills and different abilities that it's hard to be able to read these players nowadays.
Yeah.
So I think it's more, like I said, it's more mentally for me, just preparing for a game and knowing that I can go into it with confidence.
I actually think that teams watching each other so much that they're starting to become quite similar. So when teams evolve, it seems to be that they'll evolve for 1 week and then by next week, everyone's caught up with everything. Like there is nothing, if there's a move, for instance, that Sale are running this week, you can guarantee if it was successful, Wasps will be running it next week.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's the thing is, you look at your Saris and your Leinsters, their ability to bring things out that people haven't done before sets them apart from the rest at the moment, I think. And that just comes down to just watching games of rugby and just being inventive and sort of creating things almost out of nowhere. And sometimes you are going to make something that's going to make you look like a bit of a tit. But if you can make that one, it might be that one thing out of five or six goes, and that could be the difference in winning or losing a game.
Yeah. Exactly. So, as the guy who's responsible for making the back line go, and you know, for the game management in general, I mean, do you watch your tape? Do you go back to Dan McFaul and say, "Do you know what? I think this might be a good idea for this week," or is it all very much dictated from up high? Like, this is the game plan. This is what you will do.
No, definitely. It's and it's not just down to the fly half either. I think that's the thing that I've really enjoyed with Dan McFaul, and in credit to Johan Ackerman last year as well. He was pretty similar. They understand that they're not the ones out on the pitch
and
watching a game and being involved in a game are two completely different things. So you might be seeing something up in the stands with a bird's eye view that we're not seeing down on the pitch and vice versa. So you've got to have players' input, and I firmly believe that. And I think you've only got to look at any videos that are done over sort of Six Nations squads or the Lions tours, you know, those videos that they do. A lot of that is player-led, and you need guidance from coaches, definitely, but you also need players that are going to have their input, because I'm a firm believer that if players have an input in it as well, they take more pride in that and they're more willing to make it work.
Yeah.
So I think that interaction between coaches and players is crucial.
Now, just on Ackerman, almost everyone that I've spoken to that has been coached by him absolutely loves him. Can you just give me a little bit of background and a little bit of your experience about what it's like playing for him?
Well, I think he's just one of those guys that he builds good relationships with his players, and he wants to know the person more than anything. He wants to know more about you. He wants to know where you're from. He wants to know how many dogs you've got, all this sort of stuff. I mean, it seems so irrelevant, but he's someone that you like and you want to play for. And do you know what? Dan McFarlane's been exactly the same here. He's come in and he wants to spend time with his players, getting to know them, getting to know what makes them tick, because there's going to be days where you're going to come in and you're slightly down. And if you know what gets that person up and gets them going, that can be crucial. So I think it's just their ability to know their players and know what makes them tick, really.
And what do you think is a good way to influence a professional rugby player now?
I can only answer on what works for me. And I think for me, it all comes back to just that. The single best thing for me in rugby is there's no better feeling than winning a game and spending that time in the changing rooms and out on the pitch with players after you've just put your body on the line for 80 minutes. You're sore, you might have broken bones and bruises everywhere. But I think it's just that hunger to win and that desire to win. And like you said, I think to a certain extent, you've either got it or you haven't. And I certainly know that in this Ulster squad that I'm in at the moment, the hunger to win and the hunger to perform and do well is above and beyond what I've experienced before. And I think that's a massive recipe in success. I think I'd much rather have someone with a little less talent who's desperate to win than someone who's really talented but don't really care if it goes either way, and that's honest truth. So I think it's just that hunger and desire to win, perform and do the best for yourself and the guys around you.
If you don't mind, I just want to go back to the move over to Ulster and actually the IRFU stuff.
Yeah.
Prior to you realising that your time at Gloucester was ending, did the IRFU let you know that you were Ireland qualified, or was this just kind of a late thing?
I always knew I was Irish qualified.
And were they actively keeping in touch?
No, I don't think. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm not sure they're even allowed to do that.
I don't know either. I've got no idea.
It was very much for me. Like, don't get me wrong, I played age group rugby for England. I played England 18s and England 20s, and I loved my time there. But for me, it was more about moving to the club. A lot was made out in the press about me coming over to play for Ireland.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. I do want to play for Ireland, but my main reason for coming over here was to play for Ulster and to perform and to win trophies with Ulster. And whatever comes off the back of that will. I'm a million miles off. Not a million miles off, but I'm a little way off being an international rugby player, and I know that, and I felt like this was the best place for me to come and improve as a player, and that was the main thing. So I don't want to be that guy who's come over here just to play for Ireland and just to play in a World Cup and all that, because that's not it. I want to come here and I want to do well for my province and perform and win trophies here.
But I mean, you must feel that you're closer to that international spot which everyone wants in Ulster than you were in England, just because of the setup.
Yeah, definitely, and I think that just comes from, like I said, to get selected for these international side, you've got to be playing week in, week out rugby, and this is where I felt best that I'd be playing week in, week out rugby in a style of rugby that shows my talents the best, and it's as simple as that, really. So I spoke to Joe on the phone the other day when they announced the squad, and he gave me a few work-ons, which was great, and just to know that you're even in the mix and close just drives you to take that extra step to improve and
that's
hopefully
awesome.
Push them there for the next one. So, it's good.
So, if you don't mind me asking, you don't need to tell me what Joe said your work-ons are, but what do you think that your work-ons are?
Yeah, I think for me, like I've touched on a lot that I love playing attacking rugby and stuff, but there's also a time where you have to play that more pragmatic game and play field position and put your forwards on the front foot. And I think for me, it's probably just still that balance of not trying to play too much and not trying to play too much in my own half. And then there's just other little things, just taking the ball to the line and having a go myself and those sort of things, which I pride myself on, and it's just improving on them.
Yeah. What you're currently doing now, but 5% better or whatever it
may
be.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and there's going to be parts of my game that I'm going to have to improve on that I probably haven't delved into as well. But I think that just comes with, like I said, just learning the basics of my game and improving week on, week out, and then slowly grasping those other things as well.
Now, when you were a lad growing up, how much influence did Freddie have on your career? And was it him going through the academy structures and then making first team, which made it seem an awful lot more achievable once you saw your brother do it?
Yeah, definitely, it was. I remember going down, and I actually did a week's work experience with Bath Rugby. my last year of school, or my second to last year of school, and I went in and I followed the academy, and Fred was in the academy, and they just looked like they were having such good fun. It seemed like such a good sort of lifestyle, I guess. And I loved playing rugby, and the fact that you could do that as a job and do that every day sort of blew my mind at the start. So it was sort of seeing that, and then, like you said, seeing Fred go through the ranks and play for England under 18s and England under 20s, and then go and get his full debut against New Zealand and all that, was just little things that added to making me want to get there myself.
What is the best thing about being a professional rugby player? What's the worst thing whilst you're thinking of the best thing?
Training in the rain and the wind.
I love training. Well, I hate wind. Rain is great.
Oh, yeah. Well, probably every day when it's raining is not ideal. But no, obviously that and injury. Injury's got to be the worst thing. There's no worse place to be than a rugby player when you're injured. The best thing is just, Joe, it's just the everyday sort of crap that you have going in, and we're lucky that we're doing a thing that we love to do, and I still look at rugby as a hobby, not really a job, and I know that I'm lucky to do that, so it's just going in and enjoying that side of it, I guess.
That's awesome. There's nothing worse than if you're interviewing a guy or you're just talking to him, and you can tell that flame has gone out, because I imagine once that's happened, it is a grim place to be.
Oh, do you know what? I wouldn't put my body through it if I wasn't enjoying it, because it's just, like you said, it's too much hard work, and you've got to enjoy it to do this job, I think.
Completely agree. If you don't mind, we've done Steve, right? Who is Rocco?
That's also me.
So why are you Rocco and Steve?
My reason for being Rocco was, Rocco's actually got a story behind it, was we were training at Gloucester, and I scored a hat-trick of tries in this training session. It was when Rocco had just come up, Rocco Dagooney had just come on the scene for Bath. And I started running around. They were singing the song, "Oh, Rocco Dagooney." And anyway, I scored a try and I started running around going, "Oh, Rocco de Burnie," because my second name burns. And it just stuck, and everybody started calling me Rocco. And the rest is history, I guess.
Now,
So it's a much better story than the nickname Steve, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely is. Now, what is the best nickname that you've come across in rugby?
Oh, wow, that's such a tough question. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. There's so many good ones like boys pull out, but a lot of them are very rude. So
yeah, it's sort of like the innocuous ones, like sausage legs and that.
Yes. Sausage legs is, well, Aki called himself that, so I don't know if you can claim that as a nickname. But now there's loads of them out there. But I've had hundreds of nicknames, from Postman Pat to Susan Boyle to bloody everything under the sun.
So. Susan Boyle's excellent.
Yeah, I know. I shouldn't have said that. I've just lined myself up, haven't I?
Yeah, completely. What's kicker's toe?
Very good. I've got a lump on the end of my toe, which we all thought was a bunion at first, and it wasn't until I had a scan on it a couple of months ago. It's actually a broken bone in my toe, which I've been playing with for the last few years. But anyway, all the boys used to say, "Oh, you've got a bunion, that's disgusting." I say, "No, it's kicker's toe. It's from when you practice your kicking so much, it grows on your foot."
There you go.
But it never quite stuck with any of the boys. They never believed me, but these questions are gradually getting worse from him here, so I'm not sure where I'm going now.
I actually quite like the fact that you got a professional and chronic injury there.
I mean, I know. Self-diagnosed as well.
Yeah, I mean, that to me is a sign of a true professional. I know. Why is your favourite food ketchup?
My favourite food's not ketchup. I've got a phobia of ketchup.
Oh, yeah, someone told me about this.
Yeah, again, it's a self-acclaimed phobia, but so my girlfriend Jay keeps ketchup in the house, but she has to hide it because I just can't stand the sight of it, the smell of it. It makes me sick.
That's amazing. When did this happen?
I honestly don't know. I must have had a bad experience as a kid or something. I don't think I've ever tried it, but I just I've never gone anywhere near the stuff.
And is so, it like the viscosity of it? I mean, what?
It's everything, mate. It's everything about it. It's just the bottle, the smell, the way that people dunk their chips in it and stuff. It just makes me sick.
So you guys...
I just don't like it, mate. So every time I used to go out for food with Aki, which would be most nights pretty much, he'd always say to the person serving us whatever, can you get him some ketchup, please? And they'd always bring me over ketchup, and it would just, I'd go white as a ghost, and I hated it.
That is astounding. So hang on, I need to just dig a bit deep here. What if it's a different colour? Would you still know?
Yeah. So yeah, like, I would. I don't really. Sauces ain't really my thing anyway, to be honest.
Not a big condiment guy.
Not really, nah. Like, not really. But, like, it's just ketchup, mate. Even thinking that, like, I just don't like it. I don't like the stuff at all. But do you know what the weirder thing is my other brother, Sam, has got exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
And we're probably the only two people that I've ever known who've got it that bad.
Weirdly, I feel I've heard this somewhere else. I feel that yeah. I've listened to a podcast or something, and this ketchup phobia has come up, because as soon as you yeah. mentioned it, I was like,
I'm glad because none of the boys believed me when I said it was a phobia, and it's genuine. So if there is something out there, can you send it on to me so I can send it on to those boys and stick my two fingers up at them?
100%, mate. 100%. Yeah. Ask him about his Audi A1. That seems fairly mundane, but let's give it a go.
I had an Audi A3. Which I thought was like the best car, and the boys used to always ask me how my Audi A1 was, because we had a thing that Audi A1 was a woman's car, so they'd always ask me about my A1, and it was just a running joke, really.
Yeah,
these are good questions. I'm enjoying these, actually. It's bringing good memories back.
I do tend to agree with him on the Audi A3 A1. I mean, an Audi A3 is basically what you get when you're middle management at Hayes.
Hang on a minute. This was an Audi A3 with black alloys and black windows. So
yeah,
it was pretty badass, mate.
What are you driving at the moment?
Is this another question from Mark, or is this just your?
No, that's just me being a great interviewer.
I'm actually driving a GLE at the moment.
Oh, nice.
Which is very nice. Yeah, we've got a little dog at the moment, Aussie, and one more coming in a couple of weeks. So we had to get a bit of a bigger car.
Ah, yeah, it's definitely an improvement from an A3. By the way, do you guys, as a rugby club, get like a discount from a local dealer?
Yeah, no, so it's not a local dealer. We Ulster Rugby have a sponsorship with BMW. So they've also sorted. So my girlfriend drives a BMW that they gave us, which is a nice little X3. And then there's a company called Westgate VIP who sort us all out. Not just professional rugby players, but just general. So footballers and all that, and it's just really good deals for us guys, basically, which is quite handy. One of the perks of the job, for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is just off on a tangent a little bit, right?
Yeah.
I was off out in Manchester a few weeks ago, yeah. and I bumped into someone I know that plays rugby, and yeah. of all the people he was with a guy who sells luxury cars to sports people, mostly like Manchester United and City.
Yeah.
So we get chatting, and I'm thinking, like, this is a dangerous guy to be hanging around with, particularly like if you're a young man on a rugby salary and yeah. you know, you've got a lot yeah. of disposable income. This is probably not the guy you want to be speaking to. You want to be putting it in your ISA or yeah. some such yeah. thing,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So I start quizzing him, and I was amazed by this. He's like, the way that we sell it is, look, if you're on £30,000 a year and you needed a car, right, you would say, well, you can probably afford 10% of your disposable income. Well, we just do the yeah. same calculation for footballers. I was like, well, what kind of car does that get you? And
you start getting named... a Batmobile, does it?
Oh, it doesn't get you. It gets you a collection of cars. So there are lads in bloody Oldley Edge, just around us, where like City United players live. And yeah. I won't mention any names. But they're not leasing one car. They're leasing like six or seven.
Yeah, I know. It's a different world, isn't it?
It's amazing.
Different world.
All based on
fair
the fact...
Fair play to them.
Yeah, and that's all based on the fact that if you happen to earn 30k a year and you could afford 10% of your salary, well, here you go, have six cars.
Yeah.
So avoid those people, is what I'm saying.
Good advice.
Finally, he says, he's asking, where would I get the best pint of Guinness at Cheltenham?
Oh, the Tivoli. It's a great pub. I actually had a pint of Guinness with him on the weekend. He knows it's a little soft spot of mine. It's probably my favourite pub. It might be my favourite pub ever, you know.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. It's just such a nice, relaxing place, and I've got a soft spot for a pint of Guinness, and they've always done me well in there. So, I used to always be dragging Aki in there after a good win.
Oh, so sorry. Do you know what? When it says there, ask him the best pint of Guinness in Cheltenham, I'm assuming he meant Cheltenham Festival. He means Cheltenham the town.
Town, yeah. No, 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 the town, yeah.
And what makes it so special?
It's just great, mate. The environment's great. The Guinness is great. It's cold. It's smooth. It's creamy. It's just a great environment, mate. I haven't got a bad thing to say about it, if I'm honest. It's very well priced as well, so can't complain.
And have you found a similar haunt over in Belfast yet?
I haven't yet, no. I've actually had many enjoyable pints of Guinness over here, but I haven't found an establishment that's quite as relaxing and as enjoyable as the Tivoli. The only other place I would say in Cheltenham, actually, for all the Cheltenham listeners, is the Rotunda. Doesn't look like a great place outside. You walk past and you think, I'm not going in there. It'll be full of old men and horrible. But it's very nice in there, actually.
Ah. So
when you're in Cheltenham for the races next, they're your two pubs, the Tivoli and the Rotunda. You have a great time.
Yeah, so Cheltenham, I assume, is where all the Gloucester lads live.
Yeah, most of them. A few boys do live in Gloucester, but Cheltenham's just down the road. And there's just a little bit more to do in Cheltenham, so most of the boys sort of live across there.
So I'm going to assume that you haven't found the equivalent of these pubs in Belfast yet, because you've not been to them all yet, or you're just not settled. But in order to get you settled, were there any team building? Who have you found that you've bonded with so far that's taken you out for a beer?
Do you know what? We've got such a young squad over here. Everybody gets on real well. There's not really little groups. Like I've got on really well with Stu McCluskey, the 12, who's been good with me. He lives just down the road, so he's been showing me about, which has been nice. David Shanahan, the scrum half, John Cooney, those guys have all been good. Will Addison, obviously, I knew Will Addison only just through playing with him, so we're both new to it over here, so we've sort of experienced a few different places together, which is nice. But genuinely, on a whole, all the boys are they're top lads, so it's you could go out for a beer with pretty much any of them and have a good time.
Well, Bill, thank you so much. Really, really appreciate your time. Where can we find you on social media, mate? Are you often on Twitter or any such thing?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter and Instagram, yeah.
And where can we find you?
My Twitter is at BillyBurns10. And my Instagram is, I think it's the same. I think it's BillyBurns10 again.
Fantastic. Mate, thank you so much.
No worries.
Really do appreciate
been good,
it.
Been good coming on.
All right, mate. Cheers.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.